This is episode 17 of season 4 of The Bad Apples. Hi, my name is Klaatu. I'm the host and sole proprietor of this little Ogcast. On this show, we talk about Linux and technical stuff. This is kind of part 2 of a previous episode, namely episode 16 of season 4. So if you're just finding this Ogcast, then you are not going to know what I am talking about. So go listen to episode 16 if you want to know. So in this episode, we are going to talk about some more Slackware, specifically Slackware 13, and specifically one program called SBOPKG, as well as some projects that I'm working on that kind of relate to Slackware. We're going to talk about Slack builds. We're going to talk about the Qt GTK engine and other related topics, I presume. So let us start. Next exciting installment of the Bad Apples. We went through pretty much the pre-installation and then the installation of Slackware 13, and we kind of covered some of the system configuration stuff, like adding a new user and more or less defining what your X session was going to be when you started X, things like that. So this time we'll get a little bit deeper into that, but first let's talk, because a lot of the things that we are going to be able to do are going to be made easier by one program called SBOPKG. This is a program that I am very, very fond of. So if you're new to Slackware completely, you might not know, but maybe you've heard of the concept of Slack builds. Slack builds are kind of the extras repository of Slackware. So they're not the official packages of Slackware, but they are. It's a place. Slackbuilds.org is a place where people who use Slackware have written little shell scripts to help you install applications that are not in the official sort of Slackware package set. Part of the beauty of Slackware, and by extension, classic real Unix, is that it's all, it really is a lot of just plain text. And if you look at the way that Slackware installs itself, it's just literally a series of really good shell scripts saying, okay, well, here's where to put everything, and here's how to make everything start correctly. And, I mean, this is typical Unix stuff anyway. But in Slackware, some of the real beauty of it, in my mind, is that even the package management system is just a set of shell scripts. I mean, it's just saying, okay, well, here's a source code tarball, and now I want you to, untar it, and then move into the directory, and then compile it, and then move the different components around to the system. So it's just a bunch of really, really human-readable and sort of human-understandable scripts that makes a lot of this stuff possible, from Slack package to install PKG to SBOPKG. So SBOPKG is a front end to slackbuilds.org. So traditionally, you would go to slackbuilds.org and you'd do a search through their little repository list. Let's say you're looking for Inkscape. So you're looking for Inkscape, and sure enough, they have Inkscape in slackbuilds.org. And so you would download the Slack build, and then you would look at the README file included with the Slack build and see what the dependencies are. And then you would go out and find the dependencies. Quite often, a lot of the dependencies are also on slackbuilds.org, so you'd probably just search slackbuilds.org again for the dependencies, and you would download those Slack builds. So then you'd have a collection of Slack builds in some directory that you've chosen for your install sandbox, and then you would go into actually download the source code of all those individual things, like, let's say, Inkscape. You'd need the source code for Inkscape, and then since it depends on, for instance, GC, you would need to install, you'd need to download the source code for that. And I think it needs, let's just say CairoMM. So you go download the source code for that, and PangoMM, and so you download the source code for that. So there's a lot of dependencies. You download that stuff, and then you go back into your little sandbox, your little directory of installing stuff, and you run the Slack, you change the Slack build scripts to be executable, and then you execute them as root, so that they run, they untar the package, for instance, the GC source code, they untar that for you, they compile it, and then they move everything into a .tgz. So now you've got a little installable package, a Slack package, really, that you can then install with install PKG. And also, since you installed it with install PKG, you can remove it with remove PKG. So, what does this do for you? Well, it's taking source code and compiling it for you into a little, almost a cheruted environment, you know, this little self-contained environment that will then be parsed and expanded onto your actual system. But there's a record of what's been happening. So this is obviously sounding a lot like RPM and dev and all those other kinds of things, where it helps you manage when you're installing from source code so that you're not just installing from source and then you have no real record of what was installed where and no real easy way, you know, there's no uninstall script essentially. So it's kind of nice to be able to do this, and it's a good idea to do this because if you're ever installing from source code and there's not a Slack build, it behooves you to create a Slack build for yourself, or a Slack package, I guess. Or, well, I mean, I'd go ahead and do a Slack build because that way you end up with not only a Slack package for yourself, but a Slack build that you can then contribute back into the community. So we'll talk about Slack builds even more a little bit later. But in terms of SBOPKG, what this does is, well, it's a little application with an incurses GUI front end if you want the GUI, which I think is pretty handy sometimes. I use it sometimes and I just do it command line other times. It just kind of depends on what exactly I'm doing. But it does have it is a front end, and what it will do is it will rsync itself to slackbuilds.org, to the package list there, and then you can search for a certain package, and you can say, okay, I want to install this package. And then it will go out to the web, download the Slack build itself, and download the source code package itself for you, and then it will run the Slack build for you. So it will do the untarring and the compiling and the creation of the tarball, and then it even gives you the option to go ahead and automatically install that Slack package after it's finished creating the Slack package, but it always saves the Slack package itself as well, so you always have access to that again. So how is this cool? Well, this is very cool because you've got a method of taking a lot of complex, or a lot of legwork on slackbuilds.org and just reducing it to really just a little repository that's kind of very much like, you know, Aptitude, or I guess a lot of people have said it's actually a lot like the ports system on BSD. SBOPKG is basically, I would say it's revolutionized the way that I've used Slackware. I mean, it really has. And this is, I don't know if I mentioned, this was written by Chess Griffin, and there have been a lot of contributors since he first came out with his, you know, first version. But I guess it was kind of his idea of making Slack builds even easier. And it does. It makes it a lot easier because you can go into SBOPKG and you can grab, you know, you can earmark packages and add them to a queue and say, okay, I want this to be installed and then this and then this and then the big application. So obviously for something like Inkscape, where it has like 5 different dependencies, this is really handy because instead of having to go out and find the source code for each, or not find, but you still have to download the source code for each thing. And the Slack build files have the source code link in them, so you could always do just a wget. So, I mean, there's always ways to reduce the legwork, but not quite like just going into a little menu and saying, okay, install that program. So it is quite nice. And it will change the way that you use Slackware because it makes things faster. It gets you more involved with Slack builds, I think. And you can even save queues so that when you go to do a new install of Slackware and you want it to be either the same as or very similar to your other system, you can just grab a Slack build queue file, load it into your new machine, and run it. And so you might install like 80 or 100 packages just basically with one command. So it's really, really nice. So let's talk about SBOPKG and how to get it. So you remember that there's such a thing as SlackPKG from last episode. So we're going to use that to install SBOPKG. So the way to get SBOPKG is to open a browser and go to sbopkg.org. And there Chess has the source code that you can compile yourself, or he has a Slack package that you can simply download. Just download the package. I think it's less than a megabyte. So download the Slack package, and then as root, issue the command install pkg space sbopkg dash, you know, whatever it's going to be. Right now, as of this recording, it's 0.3.1, I think, .tgz. And it will install that package for you very quickly, very easily. You're ready to go pretty much now. So since you're already root, issue the command sbopkg. First thing you're going to need to do is rsync your local repository, your local Slack build repository, with the master Slack build repository on the interwebs. To do that, you just select rsync from the menu, it does rsync your, a local directory. I think it's like /var/lib/sbo or something like that. It's somewhere in your var folder, and it syncs just a list, just a package list of everything that FBOPKG, or rather everything that slackbuilds.org has available. So now you have that list on your local computer, which is nice because that way you can kind of browse through whether you're online or not and kind of start building up a queue of things to install when you are online. Okay, so the workflow for you will essentially be to either browse or search the package list. And again, within the little incurses GUI, you will find options for both. So if you browse, you'll find some subcategories as they appear on slackbuilds.org. For instance, office, multimedia, networking, libraries, audio, just different categories of applications. And you can browse through there and just kind of see what you like. Now, if you're doing this, keep in mind that you do have to kind of keep an eye on your dependencies, because SBOPKG and Slack builds and Slackware in general will not ever try to resolve dependencies for you, which is totally backwards to some people and completely great for a lot of other people, myself included. There's nothing quite, I think, as unsettling as doing a yum install whatever or aptitude install whatever and seeing that they're going to remove such and such a dependency and install a different dependency, or worse yet, there's some kind of weird conflict between the two dependencies that you want to use. I've never actually run into the conflict. I think I did once with aptitude, but that was only because I was pointing my repository list to some kind of hybrid of SID and Lenny and testing and unstable and all these weird sources. So that's kind of understandable. But the dependency issue, I don't know. I feel like the yum installs and stuff and aptitude installs, they really remove the user from the process a little bit too much, perhaps. Just, it depends on your system, obviously. I mean, sometimes you don't want to have to think about the dependencies and stuff, and that's why there are distributions like Fedora and Ubuntu and all those other good ones. But for my real system, for my working system, I prefer to have a real hand in that kind of thing. So while you're browsing through, for instance, let's say we are browsing and we see Inkscape, you want to get into the Inkscape listing, just hit return. It's all keyboard-based, so you return on Inkscape, and then there's a README file, so you read that. And this is all within Slackbuild, the SBOPKG. It just kind of, it's very self-contained and keeps you right in there. It's quite nice. So you say README, and it shows you the README file, and it will tell you the dependencies. And usually it will tell you whether or not they are available via Slackbuild. And usually they are available via Slackbuild. So you just find the Slackbuild that you want to install, and then if there are dependencies, you're going to want to add that application to the queue, and that will be a selection within that application. So you'll be looking at Inkscape, you see README file, you see the Slack build file, and then you see an add to queue. So you can add that to the queue. You can also feel free to read the Slack build file itself, and we'll get more into this in a moment. But remember that the Slack build file, it's been written by a user, and it's been checked by some very good users, the maintainers of slackbuilds.org. But there's no reason not to read the Slack build file. A lot of times you'll either learn something really cool, like, oh, that's a cool option that I can pass, when I'm compiling a software, I didn't know about that one. Or you'll simply get familiar with the way Slack builds are done, and thereby, again, you're getting more familiar with the way compiling software and installing and stuff are done. Or you'll catch something that you don't want, or that you do want that isn't a default option. On a lot of things, like FFmpeg, that's all I can think of at the moment, but on a lot of programs, there are options that you really probably want to pass that are not necessarily the default, because that's just not the default. And it's kind of your job as the person installing it to choose what you want the install to be like. Again, this isn't Fedora or Debian where some package maintainer has decided for legal reasons we can't include, such and such, or because we don't support this codec, or because it's not common enough, we're not going to bother including that as an option. I find with RPM files and deb files, it's not quite as easy to get in there and see what it's doing. Whereas with a Slack build, again, it's a little .slackbuild file right there in the Slack build directory, and you can simply look at it, you can see what options are or are not being passed, and you can just add it as you wish. So this is important stuff. So anyway, Inkscape, we've added that to our queue, and now we go back out to find the dependencies. And to do that, you simply search. So we know that Inkscape depends on GC, so we do a search for GC. We find GC. We do the README really quick. There are no dependencies to that. Okay, cool. So we can add that to the queue. The next one on the list, let's say, is CairoMM. I don't think it's actually the next on the list, but let's pretend like it is. CairoMM. So you go search for that. You find it. Add that to the queue. The next one on the list is PangoMM. Find that, add it to the queue. So, long and short of it is that you've now added a whole bunch of things to your queue. Now, if you go back out to the main menu of SBOPKG, there is a queue submenu. So if you go into this queue submenu, you'll find that there are ways to view your current queue, save your current queue file, load a different queue file, sort your queue file, and on and on. So if we went to go down and process the queue file, it would show us what's in our queue, and hopefully you would notice right away that the queue as it exists right now is sort of out of order, because we have ourselves trying to install Inkscape first, because it's just what we came across first, and then GC, and then Cairo, and then Pango. That's kind of bad practice. The problem is, of course, that the dependencies are being installed after we're installing the main application, which just isn't going to happen. So what you want to do is move Inkscape down to the bottom of the list. And in order to do this, you go back out to the queue submenu and you choose sort. And sort will give you, again, the list of the queue file, and then you can move Inkscape down to the bottom of the list. Now you'll notice that there's the option also to reverse the order of the queue file, which can be handy sometimes. Like if you're trying to install Inkscape and you've got your dependencies after your main program, if you reverse the order of that, it'll probably work, because GC and Cairo and Pango are all kind of independent of each other. Now this will come back and get you sometimes if you're doing I don't remember the application, but there are a couple of little applications where you've got to install the dependencies in the exact order that they are given. And it'll say that in the README file, but you kind of want to be aware of that. So typically, I do a lot of sorting of my queue files, typically. And again, I save my queue files. And when I'm reinstalling Slackware on some other system, or rather installing Slackware on some other system, and I know, okay, now I want to take this computer and I want to have a lot of the same applications as I have on my other computer, I'll just grab that queue file, load it into Slack SBOPKG, and process it, and walk away, and it's pretty simple. So once you've sorted out your queue file, made sure it's all in the proper order, you can select Process. And the process will process your queue one by one in order that they appear, and you can choose to either install them after they are built, or simply build the packages and not install them. I choose to go ahead and install them, because if I'm here, I'm here to install software. So I go ahead and just have them build and then install. If you don't do that, then you'll need to install PKG, the name of that package. And pretty much you walk away at that point. It will start processing everything on its own. It will download the source packages, it will compile them, it will make them into little .tgz files, and then it will install PKG those .tgz files, which is quite nice. You come back later, and it has done all kinds of cool things for you, especially, like I say, if you've got a Slack build queue file that you have carried over from some other machine, you've probably just gotten all your favorite applications on that machine pretty much with just, you know, a couple of keyboard commands. SBOPKG also has a command line option that you can use if you know what package you're trying to install. You can just do an SBO, again as root, SBOPKG-I is the option to install, and the name of the package, so GC for instance, and that will install GC for you. So this is the wonder of SBOPKG, and there are lots of cool things about it. Like I say, one of the important things to remember is that you can get in there and change your Slack build yourself, and you can customize all this stuff for you, which is again part of the power of this system, of really the Slack build system, I think, because it doesn't depend on a maintainer to tell you what you are or are not going to have in your included compiling options. And there are software packages out there, I guess especially with the stuff that I often use, like the multimedia stuff. It just seems like, there are just dozens of options that you can pass at compile time. And if you do or do not, it will change the way that you get to use your computer. And on something like Debian or Fedora or anything with package maintainers other than yourself, quite possibly you're just not getting the functionality, and you may not realize you're not getting certain functionality because maybe you never thought about the options that you could or could not pass to an application. And that's one of the most powerful things about building from source, I guess, but at least Slack package and SBOPKG kind of make it easy and kind of trackable and give you the option to be your own package maintainer, I guess. The really cool things that you can install with SBOPKG. Well, one of the really neat things is the libqt and GTK library set thing. It's the GTK engine is what it is. And what this does for you is it integrates the GTK toolkit with your Qt environment so that if you fire up Firefox in KDE, you get to see the GTK widget set. So this is, it kind of goes a long way to help your desktop look like a modern system. Does it slow it down? I don't know. I used to not bother with it under the assumption that it does slow it down, but lately I've gotten increases in power that I kind of go ahead and use the GTK set nevertheless. So the way to do that is to go into SBOPKG and find the, I think it's called lib-qt-gtk, and then the, I think, GTK-Qt-Engine or something like that. I don't know. Look up GTK and SBOPKG, and you will find a couple of different packages that relate to integrating GTK into the Qt environment. You install these, and that should go pretty easily and quickly. And then you exit SBOPKG and exit root. And then, as just a normal user, go into your system settings on KDE. And in appearance, the appearance panel, you will find a new icon on the left column, and it says GTK style or GTK or something like that, and it's got a little GNOME foot, and you can go in there and define what GTK theme you want to apply to anything that uses GTK. I usually use either, I think, ClearLux. I think that's the one I typically use. I think I might have used Industrial at one point as well. Both of those seem to work pretty well. Does it look exactly like a Qt application? Well, no, it doesn't, but it does look really nice. So I just opt for that. In the past, I have had trouble when I define the GTK appearance to be Qt 4. I have had Firefox kind of hang when I try to close it, and it seems to only be Firefox. For instance, I'll use, you know, the GTK theme in other applications, in other GTK applications, they close fine, but Firefox for a while was not closing properly when I was using a very specific GTK theme on it, and I think that theme was Qt 4. You can define which fonts you use with your GTK applications as well. You can either choose a different, you know, specific font for those applications, or just use your system settings, you know, the same KDE font. I just do that. It doesn't seem to affect anything. And then there's also a scroll bar fix for Firefox and Thunderbird, so you can install that. It's a pretty quick install. I never tried not installing it, so I don't really know what it does. I just quick install and trust that it knows what it's doing. I don't know whether I should or not, but that's what I do. So now you will find that if you start up Firefox, well, I think you have to actually log out of KDE and then log back in. So, you know, log out and then start X again, open up KDE again. And then once you start up Firefox or any other, you know, Thunderbird or whatever GTK app you're using, you will find that instead of this old sort of Windows 95 looking widget set, you have the nice, pretty, fancy GTK widget set. And it looks quite nice. Again, I don't really know if that looks all that integrated or whatever with the rest of KDE. I don't notice that it is not. It looks to me like it's integrated, but I guess I'm pretty easygoing on that kind of thing. The one thing that really annoys me is the absence of the KDE file picker. When you go to import a file into, say, Audacity, or you go to save a file out of Firefox, rather than getting the nice KDE file picker, you have to suffer through the GNOME file picker, and that's a drag, but that's not that big of a deal either. And that's just something that I guess if you ever wanted the KDE file picker, that would require literally porting the application over to Qt or something like that. I don't know. But not that big of a deal. But the GTK and Qt engine is a really nice tweak. Other cool applications and things to install via SBOPKG, just while we're on the subject, lots of different codecs. Xvid Core, X264, LibQuickTime, Lame, TuLame, libmad. Actually, libmad is already installed, I think. But yeah, just lots of, you know, very important codecs. There's of course the DVD reading and playing and things like that, the menu read and stuff like that. Libdvd CSS, libplay DVD CSS, all those different ones. There are some applications that some people consider absolutely vital depending on your line of work. Anything from OpenOffice to Scribus to Inkscape to like Ruby GStreamer bindings to NetBeans, just all kinds of different applications, all available right there via SBO PKG. So be sure to check out different cool applications that are out there via SBO PKG. I guarantee you it's going to make living in Slackware just a lot quicker, I think. It's a very fast and kind of efficient way of doing the Slack build process, the installation process. So be sure to check that out. Just in my humble opinion, just a Slackware install isn't complete, at least a user-centric Slackware install is not complete without SBO PKG. Be sure to check it out. So now let's talk a little bit about Slack builds. Quick word about what a Slack build is. Slack build is basically a shell script that tells the system how to install a certain application. So if you think about an RPM or a .deb file, which are of course two very popular packaging formats out of the many packaging formats available to us Linux users, an RPM and a .deb, more or less, they have a spec file, like the RPM, I think it is. I'm not a packager, so I could be getting this totally backwards, but one of them has like one spec file with a whole bunch of information in the spec file about the dependencies that are going to be required for this application to build, where to find the dependencies if they're not on the system already, some of the configure options, instructions on where all the different things, once they are compiled, where these components go in the system, things like that. So that would be the RPM file. And then I believe it's the deb file that has a couple of different little spec files, as it were, each dealing with a different aspect of the building process. I'm not trying to be super accurate here, so don't email me and tell me I got it backwards. Yes, I might have gotten that backwards. I might not be very clear on what exactly is happening because that's just where I am with packaging right now. But in terms of the Slack build, if we compare it to those concepts, the Slack build is simply a shell script, and you download that shell script along with a couple of other files, just informational files really about what you've just downloaded. And then you download the source code and dump it into that Slack build folder, and then you make the Slack build executable and you run it, and it does essentially a very similar thing as, for instance, an RPM. It takes the information in the Slack build, it untars the source code folder, the source code tarball, it parses all that where it needs to go, and it configures it, and it makes it, and it makes it install, and then it creates a .tgz, so a package, basically, a Slackware package. And inside of this .tgz, there is a /usr and a /lib, usually, and in those folders, it's just basically a mirror, like an exact duplicate of what your system would have on it. And then when you actually invoke install pkg foobar.tgz, then it takes, you know, it untars that little package and puts everything into your system according to where it appears in that tgz. So it's kind of its own little version of your system. And then once you say, okay, install that package, it integrates what little is in the .tgz into the rest of your very big, complex system. So that's what's going on with a Slack build. From what I understand, this is not too terribly different from what, you know, conceptually, what an RPM would do, for instance. And there is, in fact, an RPM to TGZ application that is RPM, the number 2, and then TGZ, which is, again, basically a little shell script that will look at an RPM that you download an RPM, and it looks at it. It parses all the information from the spec file or files and kind of arranges it into a .tgz, so that then you can say install TGZ, install PKG on that new TGZ, and it puts everything where it's supposed to go. So it's a really nice little application, something that is very handy. One of the really cool things about the Slack build system, I find, is that the barrier of entry seems to be a lot lower than anything with, for instance, an RPM or a .deb, at least in my view, and people are going to have different views, obviously, but in my view, it's a lot easier to get your hands dirty with a Slack build, not only to, you know, if you choose to write one, but also to look at them, just to kind of understand what's going on. You look at the Slack build script that you've just downloaded, or that you're about to download off of SBOPKG. You can look at it, you can see what it's doing, you can kind of understand how this thing was kind of put together. And sometimes it's very complex, sometimes it's very simple. It just kind of depends on the software that the Slack build is going to compile for you and install. You know, sometimes it's a pretty straightforward thing. It's ./configure with a couple options. It's make, and then a make install, and it's done. Other times, it's a lot more complex. It has to do a post-install shell script. So you've got a lot of variation there. But reading the Slack build before you build it is a really good idea because, like I say, you get some free knowledge. You get to see how, you know, some really smart people are building applications from source code and then integrating it into the system. And you get to see anything that you don't, you know, anything that you need to customize. You have the chance to customize. I don't think any Slackware user is going to tell you to simply build a software that you want to put into your system without looking at the Slack build first. Because you can do that. You can easily do that. You can blindly install it without even bothering to look. But it kind of goes against a lot of the I guess the spirit of what they're doing with Slackware, you know, it's kind of like trying to keep the user involved in the maintenance and the, I guess, building up of their system. So to build something without even bothering looking at the Slack build script, you're removing yourself where you could be involving yourself and really benefiting from it. For instance, with FFmpeg, I really am very particular about how FFmpeg is built. For me, it's a tool that I use all the time. I need lots of different options enabled during compile time. It is not something that I can compile now and then just kind of change later. I mean, not easily. And typically, what will happen is that, you know, if I get it off of a pre-built kind of, you know, if someone else is maintaining this package, and I say, yeah, go ahead and build this application, you know, this FFmpeg, just go ahead and build it for me, and it's from an RPM or something, or a .deb, I don't know what's been enabled, what options are being enabled, what kind of libraries are being pointed to, anything like that. And you can do that, and it's everything's fine, and you use it, and you're very happy, and then one day, some kind of pressure situation is going on, you need to convert some file quickly, and what do you know, FFmpeg, the I'll take anything and convert it program, suddenly can't understand, you know, some random file format because you didn't compile it yourself and you didn't double check to make sure that whoever did make the package, design that package, you didn't make sure that they actually included that option in the ./configure options. So FFmpeg, very important to me. Audacity, very important. Blender, very important. Lots of these kind of applications that I use a lot, I will only build myself because I know that no one else is going to build them exactly the way that I want them to be built. Therefore, if you read the Slack build script, you will see that, you know, certainly the defaults for FFmpeg do not include certain codecs. You know, they're not going to include this or that, and you have to specifically do it before you before you configure it. Or you have to have a certain codec installed before you do FFmpeg, because otherwise it can't, you know, compile against a certain library or whatever. You know, it's just it's a very kind of you want to be involved in these kinds of things that really, really matter to you. So the Slack build makes that really, really easy because it is a shell script. It is not obfuscated at all. It's just right there. You downloaded the thing. At the very least, you should read the README file because that usually contains what kind of dependencies you need, and it will also usually mention a couple of the different options that you do have. And then if it's one of those important applications, you should definitely read the Slack build file. And technically speaking, I mean, to take full advantage of the fact that we're all using free software here, open source, open to the user software, you might as well look at the Slack build file. You know, I mean, it's been put together by a couple of experts, and it's been approved by a couple of experts, so it's not like a huge concern probably, but if we don't look at what we're installing, then we're kind of like, we're not really taking full advantage of actually having access to that code. So it's a very good idea to read these things. Having said all of that, Slack builds are very cool, they're very easy to use, and they're not too terribly hard to write if you have a little time to learn the ropes and then a little time to actually implement what you've learned. So if you go to slackbuilds.org and you're interested in writing a Slack build, you can find a template for the Slack build there. The first time I tried making a Slack build was like last year, and I started out with a really, really big application that I could barely install from source myself anyway, and then tried to make a Slack build out of it. That was not exactly going to work. The template isn't a magic formula, it's a template. So there's a lot of extra stuff in the template that you're not going to need because one reason or another, you know, whether it's just because that application happens not to have any man pages, so the part in the template that says, okay, we're now moving the man pages into the man page directory, will fail because there are no man pages, or because there's a binary that is being built and dumped in some odd place on the, you know, within the source code directory, and so it doesn't get moved to the /bin file, whatever. So it's a template, it's a good idea to look at, it's a good idea to structure your work off of that, but it is not it's not the proverbial magic bullet. And then there's a template for the description file that Slackware uses, like when you say Slack PKG, or rather SBO PKG, and the info, get the info on that package itself. It gives you a little summary of what that package is. There's a slackbuild.info or a foobar.info file, which gives you something else. So there's a couple of little files in the Slack build folder that it wants to see, but mainly it's that shell script, possibly a shell script, a post Slack build shell script to actually do the install sometimes. It just kind of depends on what exactly, you know, how the thing is done. But yeah, that's a big thing about Slack builds is that it's not inaccessible. I find it more accessible than a lot of the other packaging formats, just because of how plain it is. It's just shell scripts and stuff like that. So, well, not always simple, but it's accessible. If you're going to use Slackware and if you are compiling from source, at some point if you find yourself compiling a package from source a lot, you might find it quite beneficial to yourself to end up with a Slack build, with a Slack package, you know, via Slack builds, because that way you get something that you can keep reusing. You know, I've got like 3 Slack builds that I've done now that I just keep reusing on my different systems because they're not they weren't on SBO PKG. One of them has been accepted on the SBO PKG under slackbuilds.org, but they weren't at the time, and so I made myself a Slack build, and that way I could take them to my different Slackware boxes and just, you know, /slackbuild and then install PKG this package. So yeah, it's a good idea, and it could help other people, it could help yourself, so give it a shot if you want.
Whether you want to choose from the latest cutting-edge software applications from some of the world's best developers, or you want to simply continue to use many of the familiar programs you're using right now, then maybe you're ready to switch to Linux. If so, we're here to help you make that switch.
I'm Larry Bushy, the host of Going Linux.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
Come join us and see what it's all about. Our website is goinglinux.com. Thanks for listening.
Try to get to some listener feedback with every episode, just because that way I don't get too far behind on the listener feedback. Ken Fallon wrote, Ken Fallon is calling publicly for an AUG feed for Hacker Public Radio. This, I think, I approve of. You know, Hacker Public Radio never ever said that they're all about free software. They never claimed to be even really a Linux show. It was, my perception is, it was once they got interviewed on Lotta Linux Links that basically every podcast listener out there, every Linux user who listened to podcasts started listening to Hacker Public Radio. So the Linux people, the Lotta Linux Links audience, I think, kind of just took over Hacker Public Radio. That's fair game. It's a contributor-based podcast. If the listeners want it to be Linux, then, you know, the listeners are going to have it be about Linux. That's kind of my perception. I could be completely wrong. You know, look it up on Wikipedia. I'm sure they've got the true story. But my point is that they never had an AUG feed. You know, they never said they were going to have one. Ken Fallon just kind of said, hey, what about an AUG feed? Because for a while I've been posting an AUG feed in the show notes of my, an AUG file in the show notes of my episodes. And that way people can, they can continue with the Hacker Public Radio feed, but then there's an AUG version just in case they need it. And really, I mean, primarily that was simply because I was encoding all of my episodes out as AUG for myself anyway. So why not post it? And that's what I've been doing. But I think an AUG feed would be kind of cool. It would require some work, I think. And since Hacker Public Radio, in my perception, is kind of suffering for contributors for episodes, let alone for contributors who are going to want to take every episode and compile it as, encode it as AUG and then publish it on the AUG feed, I don't know if that would really work. Whatever, I just think it's a good idea. I think Hacker Public Radio having an AUG feed would be really cool, and I think that there's enough, I think the fact that there's enough demand for AUG audio that it's not a matter of pride or obligation, it's just that the fact that the Linux audience actually wants AUG. We've got a lot of things that play AUG, so we want AUG. So it's really cool. So, good job, Ken, for kind of starting that thread. Ron, my friend who I've never met and had emailed a couple of times, he always emails me all of these links, and I've said before, I wouldn't even know what was going on in Linux if it weren't for him, and that's probably true. He's a really great source of news. So it looks like 360,000 IBM employees are going to be using OpenOffice now. I guess they're swearing off whatever else they were using. I would have thought they would be using, you know, Lotus, whatever, because I thought IBM owned that, but maybe it's a matter of what will or will not run on Linux, I don't know. But 360,000 IBM employees using OpenOffice seems like a really, really good thing. Could mean a lot of good things for IBM in terms of cost-cutting or efficiency or whatever. I think OpenOffice is a really great program, much better than any experience I've had with any other Office application. So that's cool, and it could be cool for OpenOffice because a big company like that that already supports Linux in some ways, using a major Linux application could mean a lot of good things for the code base. So let's hope they use it and they really pound away at it and find all the bugs and add lots of cool features. Skrillet, my co-host of Fedora Reloaded, wrote me and said that there's a really cool blog post by Fabian Flores on his site, fs-webdesign.com, and he's got a blog there, and on one of his listings, on one of the postings, there's a sort of an ID card template for the different kinds of Ubuntu that people use. So I think Skrillet is referencing my How to Fake ID Card episode on Hacker Public Radio and kind of nudging me with this. These are kind of cool little designs. They're like an ID card with a photo, and it's got the logo of which Ubuntu, you know, whether it's like Ubuntu Studio or Edubuntu or Kubuntu or Zubuntu or Gobuntu or whatever. And they each have a different color theme depending on which version of Ubuntu it is, and says what distro they use and stuff like that. So it's that's neat. It's really well designed template. I don't know if he posted the source or not. I didn't really see it anywhere, but it's Inkscape files apparently, and yeah, it's a nifty idea. I mean, it's a little bit like a fan club card. I don't really know. I mean, when are you going to have the occasion to take out your GNU Linux Freedom Fighter ID card and show it? You know, I mean, not really too sure about that, but it's a funny and fun idea, so yes, thank you very much, Skrillet. Very clever. Ken Fallon wrote me, and actually he just recorded an AUG file and sent it in to me, so I'll play that right now.
Hi Tlatu, this is Ken, giving some feedback on episode 414. As I don't listen to the show, it was by happy chance somebody happened to be playing your episode on their iPod next to me in the train. It was the part about the security on the Enterprise or on Voyager, Star Trek in general, that I found very, very funny. Well done. And I'd just like to say you missed one, which was apparently on Star Trek you're required to pick bad passwords, especially for something as serious as self-destruct in the ship. The password seems to be a combination of single digits and the words Alpha and Bravo. Okay, keep up the good work. I look forward to not listening to the next episode of your show.
And that's really funny. It's actually quite funny because he's totally right, and I forgot about that one. I think I did probably notice that at one point. I wasn't sure if the whole voice verification kind of, made it not count as much. I mean, if you need the voice print of the person, does the password for, like, self-destruct, I mean, does that raise its security level because you need the actual voice print. I don't really know. But yeah, I noticed that things for like self-destruct, which of course other people have noticed, I mean, they do that far too often. I mean, just like they do that way too often to be believable, in my opinion. But I don't know, I'm not in Starfleet. Maybe self-destructing is considered an honorable thing to do, I'm not sure. But yeah, so they just say, like, computer initiate self-destruct sequence authorization, Janeway 0100 alpha, you know, and that's it. That's the passcode for self-destruction. So yeah, that is really funny, and I've noticed how very weak that sounds, that you just issue that with your voice and go ahead and speak your passphrase aloud, and your passphrase is simply a series of numbers and maybe, if you're lucky, a Greek letter. That would be very easily cracked, I think. I don't know, maybe in the 24th century they've got really, really good voice recognition failback checking, you know, because, yeah, pretty bad to just sample Janeway's voice, saying a couple of letters and a Greek, a couple of numbers and a Greek letter, and then to just play that to the computer. Suddenly the ship is going to self-destruct. Quite nice. So yeah, careful out there. The Voyager is not a secure place to be, so don't join Starfleet until they change their security practices and their OS. And that's about it. That's all I've got for you. If you want to email me, it's klaatu@hackrepublicradio.org or klaatu@linuxcranks.info. They both go to the same inbox, so feel free to clutter that up. You can go to the website, thebadapples.info. You can find me on IM as notklaatu@jabber.org. That's a Jabber account, so you'll need to probably interface with some IM client that accepts Jabber. You can also find me on IRC, on Freenode usually, in, for instance, pound Linux Cranks, pound lot of Linux links, pound Slackware, pound a couple of other things, I forget what. But yeah, so you can find me there, and feel free to hit me up, talk to me, whatever. That's about it. Thanks for listening, and thanks for the feedback, and I will talk to you next time.
Computer has problems? Want to hear the industry solution? That's right. Your software isn't working, so what do they suggest? Use more software to solve the problem. Listen to what you're being told. They want you to purchase software so the software you already purchased will work. What? The problem is, we've come to think of this as being perfectly acceptable. So stop accepting. There's been a solution all along, but you've rarely heard of it. That's right. You've spent hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars over the years that you didn't have to. It's time for the secret to be told. Thousands of businesses, universities, and even Wall Street have been using Linux for years. What do they know that you don't? Linux is free. It doesn't need antivirus protection, and 99.9% of the software you'll ever need comes free as well. It's as easy as clicking a mouse. That's it. No more crashes, no more viruses, no more blue screens of death. And get this, Linux runs on old hardware. No need to buy a new computer every time the industry decides to boost profits and release another buggy system. So why are you still paying for the privilege of using your computer? There's a better way. Linux.